The time is 7 minutes past 10 o'clock. Coming up this hour, I have a discussion with two musicians involved in the Brass Celebration of Christmas. This is an annual event, a real tradition at the School of Music here at Western Michigan University. It will take place Sunday at 3 o'clock in the Dalton Center Recital Hall. And for this interview, I'm welcoming Dr. Robert White to the studio and graduate student Michael Goss. Thanks for
coming back.
Thanks for having us.
Thanks, yes.
So let's look at the semester as a whole bunch of practice just to get to this final concert of the year. This really caps off the first semester. Would you agree that performing different repertoire, other repertoire, focusing on lots of different things still contributes to every concert that comes up?
Mm-hmm. Absolutely. One of the biggest delights of this program for me is the involvement of our students and the student corpus that we have accompanying us. It involves the Graduate Brass Quintet, the Russell Brown Brass Quintet, which is an undergraduate honors group, as well as a few other select performers from the ranks. And coaching these groups as chamber ensembles during the semester really does factor heavily into our using them in this concert, too, because we know that they know what to do, they know what to listen for, and they've increased their sensitivity as chamber musicians. We have lots and lots of excellent performers in the School of Music who would be more than qualified to play on this concert, but these particular students, we've worked so closely with them as chamber musicians that having them involved in this just makes it extra special.
Even though there's over 10 performers here, you do consider this a chamber style concert.
Absolutely. For many, many years, it was a large ensemble that was conducted by our esteemed colleague, Steve Wolfenbarger, who's professor of trombone. And Steve's an excellent conductor. Last year, for a variety of reasons, he decided that he couldn't be available to do it. And when we started to think about who we might get to conduct, we just sort of had the light bulb go off of, how about we just don't use a conductor? Not because we're cynical or anything like that. It's just we thought, well, maybe this would work to just do it as a chamber group, since that's what we're always wanting everyone to do anyway. Even with a conductor, we want them to be listening like chamber musicians and reacting like chamber musicians. So last year we put it to the test, and it was very, very successful. So we're continuing on with it as a tradition now for the foreseeable future. We'll see. It might change down the road. But, doing it without a conductor makes rehearsals a lot more intense and a lot more demanding, as many of the students will attest. But it also, I think, really refines and elevates the final product, too.
School started the last week of August, I believe, and now here we are in early December, mid-December, I would say. Michael and Robert, if you'd take, could we take a moment to get a quick review of some of the highlights from this semester? I've talked to you already in numerous interviews with different concerts, but I'll start. There was the Nutcracker last week. I don't know if Michael, you were involved with that.
And Michael was principal trumpet of that.
Wow. I was. I played the Nutcracker with the University Symphony Orchestra, and the ballet was actually provided by the Moscow Ballet Company. Mm. So that was a very interesting experience. I've never played in an ensemble like that before. So it was a first for me.
Were you excited to see the dancers backstage?
Unfortunately,
oh, no.
I didn't get to see the actual performance. The place. I was positioned in the pit didn't allow me to see anything. But
that
I heard,
usually happens.
They always put the brass under the lip of the pit, So it won't completely engulf everything.
But even walking in or out?
No, I played the entire time.
Wow.
Yeah.
Were you proud of getting through a very difficult score like that? You really have to show yourself just solo, naked a lot in that score.
Yes, there are a lot of times in that score where the brass parts are really transparent. So even the slightest mistake, any lapse in your listening, your active listening and participation in the chamber music moments that are going on can really be alarming to the audience. But it was definitely a fun time. It was one of the hardest weeks, I think, of the semester playing wise. We played that show 3 times in 2 days. So it was definitely a marathon.
Plus rehearsals.
Yeah.
The University Symphony Orchestra performed with the ballet 3 times or with the ballet once and then the score?
We played with the ballet twice. The day before, we had a rehearsal that culminated in a run-through. Mm-hmm. And then the next day, we had another rehearsal with the ballet. And then we played the concert that night.
Wow. Wow. That does things to your embouchure, the lips of brass players, too.
I would say the hardest part about that was the concentration. You're a little fried after playing a show that long, that many times, in such a short amount of time. So, yeah, concentration is definitely the most challenging part.
Scott Borma has kept the brass sections very busy with his symphonic band and other concert bands, band activity. Mm-hmm. There's been, and then as you mentioned, chamber opportunities to play.
Yeah. Well, one of the things that Michael is also involved in is the Western Winds program. All of our graduate quintets, there's a graduate brass quintet and a graduate woodwind quintet, all of those students are getting a master's degree in performance and have an assistantship that requires them to not just assist with their studios, but play in those chamber groups and participate in Western Winds, which are collaborative programs that happen every semester between these graduate quintets and faculty. And Dr. Borma is always programming very thoughtfully, putting things together that will involve the faculty in a really meaningful way with the students. This year we did the Western Winds program at the beginning of November. We played some brass music by Paul Dukas, the mm-hmm. famous fanfare from La Paris. And we also did a new work by Catherine Saffelder, who's also a friend of Dr. Borma's, sort of a contemporary fanfare, much different musical language than the Dukas, but equally exciting. And then there was also a new work by Professor Scott Cowan, who teaches jazz trumpet and jazz studies here at Western. He wrote Suite Espagnol, is that what it was called? I'm blanking on the title. But
I believe so.
Yeah.
It had kind of a Spanish flair to it and had a lot of influence from his days in Miami where he spent some of his student years. And I got to just sit and listen to that one, so that was pretty exciting. So
you're bringing all of this cumulative playing, rehearsing, just instinct building to the final concert of the season, which you're grateful for that break that's coming up, but it's sometimes nice to have a last hurrah, and that's partly what a brass celebration of Christmas is, as it is sort of a gift to the community too, I think, is how you think of it.
Absolutely. I remember, as many of the listeners might know, I was a student here in the 1990s, and one of the most vivid musical memories I have, I say one of, but it happened more than once, was being able to participate in the Christmas brass program as a student. Playing in the orchestra was great, playing in the symphonic band was great, playing in the marching band was great. But the memories I have that are most tactile to me are the Christmas brass memories. And just so inspiring to get to hear Steve Jones and Scott Thornburg wailing away at the beginning of Sussato, it just blew my mind as a student. Now I have to do it. It doesn't have quite the same impact on me anymore. But I think that it's such a special program. And it was always conceived, even then, as they called it, a Christmas card to the community. It's just a way of reaching out and telling people how much we appreciate their support and patronage, and we hope they'll keep coming back to hear these performances.
Well, details on the concert are available at the School of Music website, wmich.edu/music/events. A brass celebration of Christmas is presented Sunday at 3 p.m. It's a ticketed event, and you can find tickets in advance through the Miller Auditorium box office, millerauditorium.com, or 387-2300. Let's hear this Susato piece that really defines this holiday concert for so many listeners.
Absolutely.
It's from Western Brass Ensemble CD recording, available now, and we'll hear the Susato. That's a recording of our own Western Brass Quintet and friends performing the Susato dances from the Danserie. My guests here today to talk about this Sunday's brass celebration of Christmas are Dr. Bob White and graduate student Michael Gause. Tell me about who arranged those pieces and their significance to brass music at Western.
Well, sure. If I'm not mistaken, the arranger of that Susato suite... in the form that it now takes on Western Brass Christmas concerts, was Donald Bullock, who was former director of the School of Music, also a trumpet player and founding member of the Western Brass Quintet. And he had an acute interest in Renaissance music, especially transcribing that literature for the brass quintet, which, you know, fills a gap in the repertoire for that group. And it also exploited his love of highly stylized, ornamented passage work. So there's a lot of that in that piece. So it makes it fun to play.
It is. And people love it. Mm-hmm. I remember Scott Thornburg telling a story once where they decided, oh, we've played it every single year. Let's try something new this year. And they did. And boy, they heard from people.
Yeah, people were not thrilled with that decision when it happened, I gather. But, yeah, you know, it is a, you know, a war horse for us. And, you know, there is always that initial getting the inertia going of, all right, let's do this again. But once it starts going, it's such attractive music that, you know, you can't deny it.
So. Could you experiment with not rehearsing it and just playing it on the day?
Well... I think, you know, my colleagues would agree with me that, you know, we need the rehearsal too. You know, you do get rusty after a year of not looking at it. So it doesn't take long for it to fall under the fingers again, but it does take some, you know, oiling.
Previously, I said this is a concert for over 10 players. I was quite...
Significantly over 10, I guess.
Yeah, I was low in my estimation. How many will be on stage?
I think there's something like 25 with the full ensemble. And I definitely want to mention the contributions of our colleague Judy Moonert, who's our instructor of percussion here at the university, and two of her excellent students, Chris and Calvin. They do quite a bit on this program. We're doing a big transcription of Mussorgsky's Pictures at an Exhibition, sections from that, all of which have... really colorful and interesting percussion stuff going on. The Susato that you just heard, Festive Cheer, which we closed the program with, has a lot of everything from timpani all the way to drum set and other noisemakers. And we're also doing a couple of medieval pieces to open the second half of the program, and Dr. Moonert will be showcasing her skills there as well, and very impressively. So.
Michael, this is pretty much all new music to you, unless you played on last year's Brass Celebration at Christmas.
He did.
I did play on last year's Celebration of Brass. And the only pieces that are returning I think it's just one. It's this, well, no, the Susato and Festive Cheer. Yeah. So everything else is new, but it over time, it gets a little bit easier to deal with the turnaround of new music and different styles and such, especially working so closely with members of the Western Brass Quintet. They really take pride in being versatile and being very flexible with the music that you get.
Well, and as a graduate assistant, you're asked to do a lot of organizational kinds of things, some teaching and as a support to full-time faculty and things like that. But how much actual performing and rehearsing are you doing as well? What kind of load do you have there?
This semester, even though I just did orchestra and the graduate brass quintet, there was still quite a bit for me to do, especially with, like we spoke about earlier, the Nutcracker going on. And we also did a musical with the vocal department, the Showboat.
Music Theater, yeah.
And I played a couple shows for them. And then, of course, we had, you know, our extra orchestra concerts. And we had a pretty heavy load for our graduate brass quintet recital. So there was quite a bit of practicing. And, of course, there's the gigging and such like that.
You mean extraneous things you pick up when people call?
Exactly. Yeah. And I also teach at Kalamazoo Kids in Tune. Yeah. So I actually play quite a bit in there when we have our full student rehearsals. So, yeah, there's quite a bit of playing. It's good, though.
When you have a concert, how early do you tend to show up to warm up for your concert?
I like to get there 30 minutes before to warm up. I tend to overplay before a concert, so I don't like to show up too early and get tired before the concert even starts.
Warm out.
I've heard that there's also a warm down where brass players especially finish a concert and do not throw their instrument in the case and run off.
That's actually very true, and I've had to be very mindful of, I guess, what I would call my chop health. Not having a proper warm down, for me, my experience has been this semester that when I start the next day, I'm very, very stiff. Things are kind of swollen a little bit. People forget that we're playing on a muscle, and if you overwork that muscle, it stops working if you don't take care of it. So a warm down is, I think, essential to a brass player's health.
What does that consist of, warming down? Stretching, like the equivalent of stretching after a run or something?
I would say yes, exactly that. It's making sure, to the best of your ability, that everything is working just as well as it was when you first started playing.
It often involves a lot of soft playing, a lot of low-ish playing. You know, a lot of the strain comes from playing really loud and high. It stiffens the muscles around the embouchure and can sort of get things a little spread and stiff. So, you know, playing really softly and just making sure that the embouchure is responsive again before you put the trumpet in the case means the next day it'll be fairly responsive.
Is it the exact same thing as like the lactic acid buildup when you weightlift?
That has something to do with it. You know, the embouchure is, you know, something like a dozen different muscle pairs involved in it. It's kind of complex, but swelling definitely is part of the occupational hazards. And that's what we're trying to mitigate when we do those things. Warming up, it's a similar deal. You know, you're just looking for things to be supple and responsive and so that you can play the concert with good form. It's not so much about muscular strength as it is about being able to keep a good balanced form from beginning to end, you know?
So, lips of steel, hands of steel. These are never really possible. Never really going to happen.
Not really, no. And I don't think they'd be conducive to good brass playing. And you know, Mike alluded to it earlier. So much of endurance for us, whether it's one big concert or a sustained set of performances over many days, it has much more to do with concentration than it does with anything physical. Being deliberate in what you're playing and hearing it in your mind and all that kind of stuff. That's part of what the brass player has to deal with. A pianist, you know, God love them for what they do. They have amazing repertoire and amazing skills. at the end of the day, they're pushing a button and the note comes out. Now, if there's much more to it than that, I get it. And, you know, pianists get injured too. I don't mean to minimize the technique of what they do, but on a trumpet, say, any button you push down, there's any one of a dozen different notes that could come out. It's the deliberate musical thought in the player's mind that dictates what actually comes out. And so the level of concentration is pretty intense, especially, you know, for trumpet players. That's why we're, you know, the way we are.
It's much more like being a gymnast as opposed to a weightlifter, I would say.
That's a good analogy.
Yeah. When you're all together rehearsing this piece, do you try to keep it half volume for your own ears?
Sometimes, but usually we're trying to replicate performance conditions as much as possible. We try not to have to do things a million times in a row. We do have high expectations of our students that when we correct mistakes and things like that, that they actually write things down and, you know, don't make the same mistake twice. That's part of professional training, too. We try to, you know, do that. So, and, you know, there's only so much we can do before we're like, well, that's going to be have to be it for today because we need to move on or we're all toast.
So a lot like gymnastics, we're saying, is the technique of brass artistry, and you can see a fantastic concert of brass music on Sunday at 3 o'clock. It's called A Brass Celebration of Christmas. Christmas card to the community. Details and tickets available through the website MillerAuditorium.com or 387-2300. So new to the program this year are some Elgar Howarth arrangements of music of Mussorgsky. Who was Elgar Howarth? Do you know?
Yeah, he was a British trumpeter and conductor. He was a founding member of the famous Philip Jones Brass Ensemble, which was a highly recorded group in the late 1960s, early 1970s. One of the first large brass ensembles to really make a name for themselves. And as I said, Howarth is also a conductor, and he saw more fame in his later career doing that, but he's also a prolific arranger, and this transcription is really a piece of work. As many people probably know, the Mussorgsky is originally a work for piano, solo piano. The most famous transcription of it is Ravel's orchestration. That's what most people think of when they think of the piece. And Howarth really sort of went back to the source of the piano score and came up with his own creative ideas about how to flesh that out and turn it into an instrumental brass ensemble piece. So listeners will hear some things that are similar to the famous Ravel orchestration, some things that are wildly different, not just because brass instruments are playing, but because of, you know, basic concepts of the movements. So it's going to be a really interesting thing to present, I think.
All right. Any thoughts on the piece yourself, Michael?
It's a really interesting arrangement. It's nice to be able to play it because typically pieces that are standard don't always come up as often as you would think. A lot of times we practice them for audition purposes and then we'll never see them in an actual musical setting. So that's definitely a fun aspect of playing the piece. And it's also really interesting to only have brass instruments while trying to create all the elements that a full orchestra would provide. So I would say it's a fun time. It's interesting. It's great.
I've queued up a few selections from this arrangement as played by the Wallace Collection.
Great.
would not want to be in Dalton Center Recital Hall on Sunday to hear Mussorgsky played by the brass sections, the Western Brass Quintet, and students and friends of the group all together in music of Mussorgsky, and great other pieces coming up as well. The Susato from almost every year of this concert. Claudio Monteverdi madrigals also featured on the program. What are some other highlights? There's some Schumann and even a much more current sort of artist represented.
Yep, that would be Björk, who I guess being an Icelandic woman, her full name is Björk Goodman's daughter, but she's officially known just as Björk. And well known as a sort of an avant-garde rock star, but also, you know, a very gifted musician, a gifted songwriter. And in 2000, she provided all the music for a film directed by Lars von Trier called Dancer in the Dark. People who've seen that movie know that there's really nothing Christmassy about it. It's actually an intensely sad film. But it has a beautiful orchestral overture. And a friend of the group, Brian Berkeley, who's a trumpeter, who teaches at the Bayview Music Festival in the summer with our colleagues Scott Thornburg and Jacob Cameron, arranged this overture for brass ensemble. And the students up there performed it last summer, and Dr. Cameron said, hey, you know, we should take a look at this because it's really beautiful. So we read it, and we thought, yeah, this would function very well on this program. It's reflective. It's not totally somber. It's definitely has some darkness to it, but it's also, you know, a very hopeful piece, too. So it fits nicely on there.
The Western Brass Quintet is celebrating 50 years since its founding in 1966. Mm-hmm. How are you marking that in the new year?
Well, in a number of different ways. This past year, we've been receiving a number of commissions that we put out, you know, in anticipation of this season. We've had works composed for us now by several of our faculty composer colleagues, David Coulson, Christopher Biggs, Lisa Coons. We also have a new work from Allie Miller, who's a composer, also an oboist with the Grand Rapids Symphony. And we have an outstanding commission that's coming in later this spring from the composer John Mackey that we did with a consortium of quintets from other universities. So we're excited to get a look at that one when it comes in and see what John Mackey's written for us. We're also presenting a BPI performance in the spring, in March, and we are also going to be doing a recording project later in the spring, once the semester is over with. We're going to be in Dalton Center Recital Hall, laying down tracks for our new CD, which doesn't have a name yet, but hopefully it's going to be... This will be the first recording that I've participated in with the Western Brass Quintet, so I'm a little nervous about it. But hopefully it'll be up to the same standards that all of their other recordings have been up to. So,
undoubtedly,
we'll do our best. I'll do my best, I should say.
Well, congratulations on a great season, and it'll begin anew in the new year, and you'll be back to talk about it, both of you, I hope. Mm-hmm. Finally, let's see... quick pop quiz. Favorite Christmas song, Michael Gause? Or least favorite, either one will do.
My favorite Christmas song is definitely, it's from the Father, I think it's the Father Time special in the ABC 25 Days of Christmas.
Wow.
It's about Rudolph, but there's a portion of it that's about, I believe it's Father Time, and he's...
The Heat Miser, yeah.
Yeah, he's got...
It's one of those Rankin-Bass claymation Christmas specials from the late 1960s.
Yes, and oh, God, I love it. It's the best. I watched it every Christmas holiday season with my mom. We would always sit down and watch the claymations. It was great.
You're going home for Christmas this year?
I am. I will be going back to Texas.
Wow, that'll be a big change.
Christmas in Texas.
If the weather allows.
You can hardly conceive of it.
Yeah.
There's no such thing as Christmas in Texas.
How about you, Bob?
Oh, well, Christmas music, when you're a busy musician, a lot of surviving the Christmas season involves avoiding a lot of holiday music more than anything else. I have a 7-year-old son, so the Kids Bop Christmas album is in heavy rotation on my car stereo when we're driving around. And I've been able to sort of tolerate that. As long as I don't hear Mariah Carey's All I Want for Christmas Is You, I usually am doing pretty good. That's the one Christmas song that really turns me into Scrooge, I guess. So everything else I'm pretty good with. So,
well, it'll be great fun to join you on Sunday with all of your friends for a brass celebration of Christmas, 3:00 Sunday afternoon in the Dalton Center Recital Hall. Details on tickets at milleraudatorium.org or the School of Music website, wmish.edu/music. Thanks, Bob, and thank you, Michael.
Thank you, Kara.
Thank you.